We don't want to leave the impression that it's either you have the study or we have no information. We will still seek to do that without the study.
Further questions? Mike?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just that I guess that I would go along with this $25 level. I assume this is an annual fee. And for the, I don't know how you tell the, and essentially we're saying to the commission, you got the authority to adopt a fee and it's going to be $25. Now the next time they go to try to set the fee, which would be the next biennium, I don't know how we can highlight this little high-risk study that it's going to be completed and therefore can't raise the fee. In fact, you got to drop the fee $5. And once the study's done, it's done, right? So there's not a need for a $25 fee unless for some other reason.
Right. Well, you started out with, for this whole program, more than 30, right? When you started it out with things you wanted to do within the tank program. You reduced it to 30. Then you came here and we reduced the tank fee in the super fund, and you're going to do more with the tank fee over in 115 that you weren't going to do in the super fund money because we reduced the tank fee there. We reduced the tank fee out of the spill response by a substantial amount. Now the question is, can we have a tank fee that's adequate so you can at least do this program? And it seems to me that what you've said continuously was that $25 was what would be adequate. Now it looks like that you might be able to do the high-risk study in addition to that, but within that. But it seemed to me that all the time you were saying that the $25 was the fee that would be adequate, would give you the program you need. So am I wrong?
That's correct.
Yes, that's correct.
Is there any objection to the $25 fee?
Well, Mr. Chairman, when is the implementation date? Because I hear about you saying that because you don't plan to do anything until late in this part of the biennium. And because of the uncertain number of people out there, you wish to certify and inspect. So when is the implementation date?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gee, EPA tells us they will have their federal rules in place in June of 1988. It will take our commission some 90 days to 180 days after that to adopt state rules. Once those rules are in place, we then can adopt the program for the certification. So it all will occur this biennium, but the rules will be around September of 1988. For technical standards, and around January or March of 1989 for the people who install and test.
So the implementation for this fee will be March 89?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we'd anticipate collecting the first fee around January of 1988.
And you need to
collect it again January of 1989.
Now, tell her what you're going to spend the fees for. What are you going to buy with the fees during this biennium?
Again, staff to be able to adopt rules, some contract money to be able to provide information out to the owner-operators as to what the rules are, how they can comply with those rules, money to be able to certify people who do installations, money to certify people who test installations. And money to inspect, to review plans and inspect.
Stan? Mr. Chairman, I think there may be a bit of confusion, because with the latest discussion this morning, we're talking about a potential other fee that was provided in the statute. The $25 fee, or the 20, 25, or 30, whatever is selected by the committee, that fee, it's intended that fee be put in place immediately as soon as the commission can adopt the rules.
The
installation, the inspection fee that has been discussed this morning is on a much longer time frame, as Mr. Ryder just pointed out, due to the EPA rules being adopted. So there are two potential fees. The 20, 25, 30 would go into place very soon. The other fee, if we did that, would be much later.
Okay.
So you're going to impose fees before the rules are adopted in June 88, before the federal rules are adopted in June 88, and before the commission adopts rules in September 88.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, that is correct. That startup cost for the program and the fees to finance that would start very soon, presumably this summer, as soon as, or January, effective date of January. That's true.
Yeah, I'm going to let this budget out at 25, but I want a record to show that I will not vote for it and to get it out of here, just as a courtesy to get it out.
Okay.
I'm going to do the same to vote it out, but I want to have a chance to review this more before a vote in the full committee.
Okay, this is not the motion to move it out, but this is the motion for the $25 fee. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Let's go ahead.
Okay, the next question is, do you want that $25 placed in statute? Or you want it as a budget note, or you just simply want to leave total authority to the commission as it stands in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I can, if I may, give you my version pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want an open-ended fee left to the commission.
Up to 25 would be probably, they would.
That's fine. That's fine.
Can we agree upon that?
But an open-ended fee above that is.
What does the bill call for now? What does it say?
It says fees may be required of every permittee of an underground storage tank. Fees shall be an amount determined by the commission to be adequate to carry on the duties of the department or the duties of a state agency or local unit of government that has contract with the department under Section 9 of this 1987 Act. Totally open.
Okay. You put not to exceed 25 and you found more tanks than what you think you've got. Theoretically, the commission could drop the fees.
Can you live with that? Okay. Why don't we do it that way? Any objections? Okay. All right. What else, Sue?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know whether we were excused or not, but bells rang.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. We're excused on the Senate side, but I know we've got another committee. Does this complete 115? Let's try to make all of the decisions really related to 115. Okay. That's done. Okay. Then we'll
meeting tomorrow morning.
Yes, at 8. Meeting here.
This is the Transportation and Regulation Subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee having a work session on Senate Bill 5521, Department of Environmental Quality, and a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 115, Underground Storage Tank, Senate Bill 116, Hazardous Waste, Senate Bill 117, Water Pollution Control Revolving Fund, Senate Bill 122, Hazardous Waste Cleanup, and House Bill 2367, pertaining to asbestos, June 13, 1987, at 8 o'clock.
Oregon have always found to be valuable. What I maybe can do most easily is to focus upon what that $303,315, that's the piece that has been identified by Sue, is dealing with. It accounts for a total of 3.5 FTE. 1.5 of those FTE are in decision package 112 and represent principally the increased level of inspections and compliance assurance activities that would be associated with generators. The next 2 FTE are associated with decision package 113, and again, they are somewhat interchangeable depending upon your decision. They are people that one person that is represented in our waste reduction, and that is really solving the problem before it is created, as well as one person in our technical assistance. Those 3.5 FTE represent those things which the federal government do not require, and consequently, if you say, what can you do at the bare minimum and still maintain authorization, those positions can be eliminated. We feel, of course, very strongly that that's the thing that distinguishes the Oregon approach to problem solving from the way the federal government does it, and feel they're very important. We do believe that if there were some lesser amount than 303, we would have a heavier emphasis on the waste reduction, technical assistance, and lesser on the inspection enforcement, additional inspection compliance assurance piece.
What could you do with, say, 700,000?
Mr. Chairman, we have put forward, again, the dollars break a little bit funny, so let me put it this way. If we had two of the 3.5 FTE, what we have looked at, that's, by the way, about 212,000, which is then about 713,000 rather than 700,000. But for that, we would have, instead of 1.5 FTE in the inspection compliance assurance, we would have 0.5 FTE. And on the waste reduction technical assistance, instead of having 2 FTE, we would have 1.5 FTE. So about 0.5 FTE associated with the additional compliance assurance, and 1.5 on the waste reduction technical assistance, that outreach to business.
You talk in terms of FTE, but that doesn't tell me about the adequacy of what you can do or can't do.
Mr. Chairman, what we had indicated before is that the 1.5 additional FTE that were in the inspection compliance area would mean that we would be able to increase from approximately once every 10 years to once every 5 years inspections on average of generators. We would be dropping that back to about one-third of what we were originally doing, so that would probably mean that we'd be in the range of once every 8 years or so. I'm just going to be kind of rounding it off, but somewhere around that. Instead of 10 years as originally required by feds, down to in the range of once every 5 years as proposed, we'd be probably about once every 8 years on average as proposed.
Yeah, Fred, the reason for accelerating the inspections of generators, is that Oregon's idea, or did federal rules today increase that also, or would they have, or did they ask you to do it, or that's not very good to work on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, I think I understand.
What I want to say this morning. I will.
I bet he will.
I think I understand. Let me try it this way and see if it answers or not. The federal government has indicated that they expect that generators are inspected at a minimum once every 10 years. And so that's their requirement. Now, they're going to be asking for some other things, but basically this 1.5 FTE in the original package, or the half that I just responded to, would be providing inspections above and beyond what would be minimally required by the federal government.
That was sure my question, and the reason for it.
The reason for it is that, let me make a distinction between the federal government approach and ours. In one sense, the federal government really basically says, if you inspect, you can find people that are doing wrong, fine them a big fine, and set an example that will bring other people into compliance. Our view is the more you're out there with people, the more you have people who are, I think, by and large, not completely, willing to comply if they understand what it is they have to comply with. If you could have them in compliance, you have less than illegal or inappropriate disposal of hazardous waste and all the other incredible costs that are associated with that.
Now, when you talk about generators, you're talking about manufacturing concerns that generate waste. Is that right?
They could be manufacturing, but they could also be other activities, yes.
Small businesses.
Yes.
And I'm trying to think, Mr. Chairman.
Probably not.
Probably not.
But now you're not including in that the waste disposal sites as such, though.
there is only, Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, there's only one hazardous waste disposal site licensed in this state, and that is the site at Arlington. That there are others who would do...
Now, we're only talking about hazardous waste, sorry.
Yes, hazardous waste disposal site.
All right. So we're back then to talking about the manufacturing concerns, whatever they might be, that generate hazardous waste.
Correct. And this would mean that you'd have more presence.
As an example, Trojan would be one.
Trojan must have some hazardous waste, though certainly the major concern is on the radioactive, which is not under our responsibility. I'll look at Rich. They have some solvents and things at Trojan. But the major concern that most people focus on at Trojan is, of course, the radioactive, which is not our responsibility.
Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I guess it would be the manufacturers of all types of pesticides and that type of product that causes hazardous waste. Is that a good...
Is it users as well as manufacturers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, in terms of both of your questions, it could be both. In this state, we are not a large manufacturer of the raw material, which then is both hazardous material and potentially becomes hazardous waste. Principally, what you will find in these groups of people that we're dealing with are people who will buy hazardous materials for their manufacturing process, solvents to clean parts, other things, and in the manufacturing process, they become waste. They become contaminated with whatever they are working with and have to then be handled properly and disposed of. Those are the generators we're dealing with.
I believe, though, that we addressed this question last week, Mr. Chairman, regarding Senator Thorne's loss of some weedicides that he had up there, Roundup or whatever it was, and I believe that your response to it, or one of your people, was that could be a generator of hazardous waste if that the person that took his Roundup, he lost that in the road and spilled it, then that would have been a spill cleanup deal that is caused by a farmer.
Chairman Representative Jones, again, pesticides are one of those unique situations where, in fact, if it is applied as allowed for under the application and the label, then it is hazardous material properly being utilized and being applied to the environment is not being regulated as a hazardous waste. If there were a spill of a pesticide, meaning a non-licensed application of that, then it is potentially a hazardous waste where you'd be picking it up and having to deal with it. The containers at the end of pesticide use need to be disposed of properly. But normally, at least, the normal farm agricultural type activity would not be a generator of hazardous waste. If there is a quarter of a barrel of Roundup or other things that and is going to be disposed of, then it would be treated as a hazardous waste. But if it's really being used as required under the license and the application, it is outside of the hazardous waste rules and regulations, other than for
one final question, Fred, and that, what's the most common hazardous waste that you're talking about, that you're looking at on a day-to-day basis?
Probably, I mean, I look at rich solvents would probably really be it. Solvents for a whole host of manufacturing operations, auto repair, others.
I'm familiar with solvents.
And at what, maybe 25% or so in that range would be the solvents.
What is, we have to decide, I suppose, at what level of program we want, how much FTE we want, and probably how often that they do the inspection, whether they do it a little more often or
less. I think, Mr. Chairman, that's the real key here, is what's the need of the accelerated program, and that, of course, we'll drive what we're going to try to do right now.
Why don't you talk to that, Fred?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, again, if when you asked the question at the 200,000 level, what would we do? Out of those 3.5 FTE that we're going to do, about 1.5 on inspections, increased inspections, and about 2 of that, meaning a little bit over half of the effort, was going to go for actual waste reduction technical assistance, meaning resolving the problem before it's created. We said at a lesser level, we would bias it even more toward that waste reduction technical assistance and do some more, but a lesser amount in terms of the amount on that increased inspection. We think they're both important, but we really like the outreach, trying to be able to assist companies to learn how better to manage their waste and produce less of it, because that's in the long run the better answer.
And your solution to go to the general fund was why, rather than some other kind of funding?
Again, Mr. Chairman, we ended up first off convening a committee composed of the regulated community and said, we cannot afford to be able to operate the program where we are. There are more federal program requirements coming down. There are not enough dollars there. We first looked internally and made some permanent shifts internally to the budget. Secondly, we approached the industry and said, we need to talk about additional fees. They said about $710,000 of additional fees, and you've heard the testimony from Mr. Donica, who was the chair of that committee, to that issue. And then the question was that those fees were getting substantially high on a relatively small grouping of people. Question was, where else can we go? We put together then the general fund request as the last of the order priorities and said, we still feel we need some additional general fund, and came to you in that regard. Came to the governor first, and he agreed, and then now to you.
Yes, good. And, Mr. Chairman, my biggest problem with this is backfilling the federal fund. And, you know, why did they back away and leave the burden to us to pick up something that they've been doing? And if it's so important, why did they back out of it?
They sort of have the habit of doing that. But other
I know,
than that, why else?
Yeah, and if we continue to do it, I'm sure they'll get worse at it.
Mr. Chairman, there are two things here that happened. One is that the funding at the federal level, even with Graham Rudman and all else, in this particular area has remained quite flat, in fact, gaining slightly. EPA's budgets as a whole, after the early years in the Reagan administration, have held flat. What has happened here principally is the result of a change in the formula for distribution of the federal funds. And that change in formula, which eliminated land area, meant that large land area states like Oregon, or most of the really of the Pacific Northwest, Texas and others, then were damaged in relationship to more populated areas in terms of the bias. Now, something we worked very hard with the congressional delegation to see if that could get turned around, and even Senator Hatfield, with the authority he has, felt that that was not possible to turn around. Now, there are, Representative Jones, two ways one can look at this. One is that it's a backfill of general fund. The other one is we really saw it conceptually as the fees, increased fees, backfilling the federal fund piece. And then what this really is dealing with the general fund piece is, where do we go from here to be able to address some of the additional needs that we have to run the program? No. But it's
can be that's seen. The way they did it, the quiet they did it. He's just explaining that, of course, we're in the desolate part of the United States here, that large land mass that they decided to back away, but that ain't why. That's just the way that they decided to. Come right in.
Sometimes. I mean, you're welcome, though. Right or wrong.
I'm sure that what he was referring to was that, well, it's a mass of people, so maybe they need protection more, but
poor
we're, we're people also, even though they're implemented, there's more land. And
sometimes having a lot more land and fewer people make it harder to administer a program rather than easier. They should put the funds, you know, where it's more difficult to have a program. But probably it's a matter of power and who has power and votes.
That, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure that's a part of it. The logic, at least as put forward, is that that population is probably a greater driver of how much hazardous materials are and waste are being produced rather than necessarily land size, and consequently tried to be able to key that off of that issue. But I'm sure that the where the votes were within the, particularly the industrialized Northeast, had to have made some difference, because that's who did pick up in relationship to this.
I guess more than having to backfill, and I think we are in a sense backfilling for some federal funds. My concern about the general fund contribution here is that it may open an artery that will grow and that will be a new commitment of general fund that will get bigger and bigger and bigger as we go on. How can you ease our feeling about that?
Chairman, to the best of our ability, what is here is in response to federal programs, in response to the hazardous solid waste amendments of 1984, and that what we at least see on the horizon in terms of being able to implement those, that this is what is going to be necessary. I mean, there may be slight marginal differences, but we don't see major issues. I cannot assure you, and I don't think anybody can, whether the U.S. Congress is going to say, hold it, there are new major program thrusts that they want. There are nothing that's that looks like it's going to be coming directly, but that's something the Congress has within their power. But under the current law and what is being projected, this really addresses where we're going with maybe some things at the margin, but not major thrusts.
You see future federal funds taking this general fund contribution away, or future fees, or some other kind of source?
Mr. Chairman, of course, anything is possible. It seems to me that at least within the current mood within the Congress, that where the administration had historically proposed fairly large cuts in EPA, they have not even proposed those cuts. And so what you're doing is you're holding flat funding under the Reagan administration. Clearly, another presidential administration stressing environmental programs could see additional dollars go this direction. We'd love to see that, because obviously it gives that relief. But whether that's going to happen or not,
appears to be a distribution thing that they've decided to change. If the money's still there, but we just get less of it than used to be our share.
Yeah, also, this is basically a new program. We're enhancing a program.
In terms of the hazardous waste program as a whole, the first program was created in 1976, and what you really then had was the federal government coming in the 1984 amendments and saying there are a whole series of holes we want filled, and really went in and directed that they be filled, and in fact very clear and complete language of exactly how they were to be filled. And that is what you have before you here, and that is those programs that are being implemented in response to those 1984 amendments.
But Michael,
so if I understand all this right, then in order to maintain the minimum required under the 1984 amendment, we have to come up with almost 501,000.
Correct.
There's no.
Yeah.
It was open with Representative Jones. Yeah. That's not an issue.
Yeah. You have to come up with at least that much to maintain. To meet the requirements.
Yeah. Chairman, yes, to be able to meet the minimum requirements to maintain authorization for the hazardous waste program, we need that $500,000 and almost $1,000. The $303,000 is the enhancements that make the Oregon program.
Yeah, right. And if we can, I would like to buy some of those enhancements, because I think they make sense. And I'm wondering, you said about $713,000 would enable you to do quite a bit.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. What we did is we put forward the two FTE, and as I told you, we broke those mostly in the waste reduction technical assistance. That is three quarters of it there, and one quarter of it, or a half an FTE, in the inspection. That would cost, by our estimates, $212,582, which would be just about
$713,000. Mr. Chair, let's try to see if the subcommittee can go on.
Okay. That's, Mike is suggesting that we cut the request by $212,000. Is that right? No?
No. Up to 212.
Up to 212.
From the base of 500.
Yeah, from the base up to 212, which means we cut it down from 840 to 713.
Well, so that I understand, Representative Kopetsky, you're talking about lowering the federal part of it instead of the other.
We're talking about buying what we have to buy with the 1984 amendments, the 500 and some thousand, and then buying a bit of Fred's enhancement of 212,000 more than that. This would allow them to do more than.
I guess, though, I didn't understand, Representative Kopetsky, that we were talking about the 200,000 plus to pertain to the